it was definitely something I had to sit down and prepare for, but I was ready. I was definitely ready. And then to come in here and see what I saw in the media in real life, yeah, it was surreal. It was surreal.
What did you see?
The bad aspects of what you saw on TV were very real. You saw people throwing things at us. You saw every negative aspect that you saw on TV when it came to the burning of the buildings, the fights, the people, the way that they interacted with us, that aspect was real. And unfortunately, though, what I did not see on TV or hear on the radio following the shooting was how close-knit this community really was. To me, that's not Ferguson. When I came here and I got to see the real Ferguson and how this city adjusted to what was actually occurring, it made me want to stay here that much more, because of course I get the question, why are you nuts coming here to Ferguson when all this is going on? I'm like, no, I'm not nuts. Like, this doesn't bother me, you know? I mean, at the time, the idea of violence, the threat of violence and all of that, I knew that taking on this job. So when I go in and I'm seeing all this, okay, well, if you can picture I'm going to watch a movie of what's going on in Ferguson. We're going to take every bit of the media's view of this. And then once that movie's over, what are you going to see? You're going to see everyone from the kids on up to the elderly cleaning up this town. You're going to see everybody out there. And I have been thanked more in the last close to 11 months that I've been here for being a police officer and thanks for the job I do, and then I have in 15 years that I've been doing this job. So that should tell you, I mean, there's so much more than what people saw on TV. This community is not the shootings, the lootings, the violence that what you see on the news.
Why then do you think that there was such a negative, violent response? You know, why do you think that at so many of the protests there were people who were so angry with the police?
That's not something we're going to get into in this interview, because that's now we're steering more into what has gone on with the protests, with the, you know, Department of Justice and how the response, and that's not something that we're going to respond to at this time. I'm not going to respond to. I'm not going to be allowed to respond to.
What were you exposed to? You're talking about kind of seeing all of these negative things
right
on the news. Did you experience any of that in real life?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Every bit of it. Every bit of what you guys saw on TV is what I was exposed to. And every one of the officers out here were exposed to. And unfortunately, the community was exposed to. So that was very real. Day in and day out, our lives here were driving into work wondering if somebody who has this vile hatred of police and the uniform are going to see inside your car. Is this police officer driving in? Or are they going to try to do something to us?
How did you handle that?
As with any aspect of this job, from the time I was 21 years old until now, 15 years later, you have to have in this job, you have to have a solid support system. You have to have a healthy outlet when you're dealing with people standing there telling you they're going to rape your daughter, they are going to kill your family, and they're standing 2 feet from me, one, you know, at times right in front of my face. You know, they're looking at me and telling me this. And what we try to do, we try to channel that. We try to realize that's here and right now. You know, an hour from now, I may be going help perform CPR and somebody's going to save somebody's life. I may go try to catch a burglar. And for me personally, and for a lot of the officers, what we do to help the community offsets this negative aspect that we have to hear every day. You know, when I get to look at somebody and you go to a call and you see the hurt in these people's eyes, or you see the house has been burglarized, or somebody's been shot, or somebody's having a heart attack, or somebody just has questions about fraud, you're able to look at them and know we're helping them and we will do anything that we can to help them. Just like any member of these people that stand out in front of the street and they want to yell at us, if they only knew, if they really understood that we would do the exact same thing for them, they would get the same level of professionalism that we give to the community anytime they call us, we would give it to them.
Your name actually was given to us as a good person to interview from a member of the community, and your reputation is that you are very active in the community and you're well known, you're visible. Why is that important to you to have that engagement?
Well, because that's our job. Our job isn't out here to write tickets and just handle calls. I get so much satisfaction out of this job by driving down a street and knowing that, you know, possibly I prevented a crime just by the officer presence there. Just, you know, that's one aspect of the community policing, but it's getting out and knowing the faces of the people that we serve. And it's going out and talking to the business owners, stopping on a street and having Kool-Aid with some kid, you know, that's selling the Kool-Aid. It's driving by and getting a wave. So to me, that's a large part of the satisfaction that officers do get in this job. We've got so many challenges and so many hurdles that we have to overcome that the small bits of satisfaction that we get are getting out and talking to the community. You walk in, you go to the I Love Ferguson store, hey, how you guys doing? And then somebody comes over and gives you a hug. I'm like, best day ever, right there. You know, I mean, it's that part that you, when you get out and you really start to get to know who's here, who's in this community, who can I call for help if I need something.
What is your average day like here in Ferguson? You know, what are things that you see that make you really glad you're here? What are things that you see that concern you?
Well, the everyday is just like everybody else's everyday. You get up and go to work. I mean, our concern as police officers here is, are we gonna make it home? You know, so when you're talking about our everyday as a community, everyday as a police officer, we make up the community as well. You know, we're working for them. And you're talking my everyday and everybody else's everyday when we come in, the other officers at work here, it can be concerning. The crime, what could happen, just isn't every job, you know. But it's not necessarily the crime. It's the, when you're going and do a call, whether it's a shooting, it's a man with a gun, it's a report of a burglary in progress, you don't know who's inside, but you got a report of somebody inside of a house or a building. It's not necessarily the call that we're going into that's scary. It's the flash before our eyes of what we could lose that's scary to us. You know, that's the white elephant that officers talk about. Aside from that, what we like to give to this community is giving them the very best that we can. Whether it's a dog barking call, you know, this, from everything that you could possibly imagine, that way, from that range to the shooting, you know, and you get calls for shootings and we still have members of the community that are, don't want to speak up, fear of retaliation. You answer a call for somebody who'd been shot in the leg, and they most likely know who did it, they just refuse to tell us. Or you get neighbors that are scared to open up and say, it's this house here, this house is the one that we see people coming and going from because their fear of retaliation from certain houses. So, and the part of the community policing is, they actively get into these subdivisions, actively go out and speak to the neighbors, get their comfort with us, get them to understand we are here for them. We're not here to write them a stop sign ticket. You know, that's not our job out here. And it's gonna take a lot on both ends. It's gonna take us getting back into those communities and the community accepting all of us back for the very reason that we're there.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you build that trust?
Some trust is already there. So you're gonna have people that trust us. And like I said, I've been thanked more in 15 years in the last year that I've been here for doing my job, you know. So it's there, it's definitely there. The approval rating that we have is in the 70s, 70%. So it's there, it's now taking, it's about going to the, which we already do as part of community policing here, is go to the neighborhood association meetings. And so it takes people getting involved in them and come out. We had a Explore program that we opened up here, but the involvement was very small. And so we only had a few people show up for the Explorers. And the Explorers is where youth in the community can come up and have an active role in the police department. They can learn to be police officers and they actively work with us. You can do ride-alongs and learn about crime scenes and whatnot, but it was slim. The participation was very small. And that's another way, getting back out, okay, this is what we do, is it going to a restaurant and, you know what, some morning we're gonna have coffee with an officer. And so we'll start it that way. And it's the part of the community policing where you get back out and you start talking to people, and so they can understand, hey, this is what I do every day, and this is what I can do to help you every day. And so you're going to rebuild that trust slowly for people that may not have it, and you're going to further build that trust on the people that are already there.
How do you make decisions in those moments where the discretion is really left up to you?
It's, as with any of us, it's the big picture. You know, when, for an example, we got a call of a burglary in progress. So it was put out that there was a vacant house and people were inside. And I don't know what's going on inside there. Is there a drug exchange? Are somebody stashing stolen property? Are people squatting inside that house? There are so many things that are going on in my head on the way to that call that I'm trying to prepare for as I'm getting there. So when I get there, I get inside and I hear screaming, but they're kids screaming. So I have 5 kids under the age of 11 that found that this house that was vacant had an open door. Somebody had previously broken the door to the back of this house. We didn't know about it because nobody called and told us, then we can notify the homeowner. But so we go inside, one officer goes in the front, I go in the basement, and these kids are just scurrying. You know, they're scared. They're scared. They just see police officers there. The first thing they're thinking is, am I gonna get in trouble? You know, where are my parents gonna find out? So they run, and they're running around the house. We have nowhere to go because we got them boxed in. It's almost comical to a degree because I feel bad for these little guys. They don't understand. So they're in there playing hide and seek is what we ended up finding. So I sat them all down in the living room, and I explained to them. I mean, this is an obvious burglary. They were inside of a house, didn't belong to them. If they had the intention of doing a crime, I don't know. I don't know if they're gonna plan on stealing anything. So I explained to them, guys, there's so many things that could go wrong with you being inside of a house. Besides the fact it's not yours, you don't need to be in it. But I explained the drug aspect of it. I explained the other people could be in here doing things. You may walk into something and all of a sudden you're witnessing something, rape. You could be witnessing, you know, any number of things. I said, you just put yourself in danger. This isn't just a simple hide and seek game inside of a house. And I tried to make them think. And on something like that, I took them home to their house and I did not charge them with anything. Was it a crime? Yeah, sure. But is that the big picture? No. The big picture is to get these kids to understand, you know, what they are doing when they make a decision like that. So that's an example of a discretion that we are able to use. Now, my reason of doing that, it's the big picture. It's helping these kids in that instance there of understanding, not charging them with a crime. That wouldn't have got anywhere. It would have made no sense. It makes more sense to be able to talk to them, talk to their parents, which I did in every case of these kids. And they got it. They understood it. And I got thank yous from their parents.
Do you feel like you have changed anything in your approach to the job over the last year?
My approach to the job, yeah. I mean, look at what just happened in St. Louis. An officer was ambushed. I mean, that's an everyday thought. We were threatened with that numerous times out here on the street. You get people tell us, you're going to get yours. You got one of ours, you're going to get one of yours. And that's an everyday thought that we have to think about. I have to go into a call wondering, am I going to make it through this? I try to prepare for it, but I can't control it. When we had one of our officers shot here several months ago, I have 2 kids, age 5 and 6, and I try to shield them from everything. I don't let them watch the news. I don't want them to hear what potentially could happen to their mother. When that officer got shot, I don't know how my son heard it, whether it was me having a conversation on the phone or anywhere. I heard him, he chased me outside as I dropped him off. I was on midnights at the time, so I dropped him off. And he came outside and he's like, Mom, don't let any officers get shot tonight. I'm like, that was a shot to my gut. And he was 4. He was 4 at the time. So does that change your approach? Oh, absolutely. It's going to change everything because that's what I talked about before. It's when you go to a call and the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, or you've got a car pulled over and something doesn't seem right, or you get a call for a vehicle stalled on the road like I've had before and I'm fighting a guy for a gun. And I'm doing my job. This is what I'm trained to do and this is what I love to do, and I'm going to handle that call and I'm going to come out of it alive. But the fear of it is everything I could lose if I don't. So that very day that my son said that to me, I came home and, you know, I always promised him, like, I'll be home. I'm coming home. You know, your mom's going to be okay. I wrote him both letters I put them in safe deposit box in the event that I don't make it home. You know, so does it change? Every threat that we hear, every negative thing that we see that continues to happen to us, absolutely it changes us. It affects us. We carry that. Just like we carry the weight of a baby dying that we couldn't save or a burglary that we missed by 3 minutes. We carry that.
What I'm hearing from you is this description of a fear, this concern of what could possibly happen when you go into a call. On the other hand, I've heard from a lot of people, particularly people of color in the Ferguson community and the broader St. Louis region, say, you know, I'm worried when I get pulled over. I worry for my sons. I am concerned about how these interactions with police could go. There's like this similar apprehension. How as a community and how as a police officer do you work to reduce that fear?
And something like that, that's why it's important that we reach out to the community itself and let them know, you know, this is what you can expect of us. Not, like I said, one of my biggest challenges is what the society thinks of us. We're the most needed, yet the most hated. We want to try to change that perception, and we want them to understand. I want them to change their expectation, if that is their expectation, of when they have any kind of contact with the police, whether it's, hey, how you doing, at QT, or as I'm pulling out of the police department lot, or wherever else. I want their expectation to change. I want them to expect that I am gonna talk to them like a human being, and I'm gonna talk to them like I would talk to anyone. And when I say talk to them, I'm talking to everyone. I don't break it down by race. I break it down by people. I don't go to a call or go to a traffic stop and break it down that way. I don't look at it that way. I've got a racial profiling form that does that for me, but I don't. Okay, so when I talk about getting involved in the community, it's that perception starts to change the more interaction that we have or they have with the police department. There's still a lady that I see to this day that I met within the first week of being here. She was terrified. She lived along one of the streets that back up to West Florissant and just scared, terrified of everything that's been going on. And I gave her a hug and I'm like, we're going to take care of you. We'll be here for you. Just call us when you need us. This is what you can do to try to prepare. And she still to this day sees me. I just saw her last weekend at the farmer's market. And it takes the interaction with us without the expectation that something will go wrong. Same thing on our side. It takes our interaction with everyone with the expectation that it's not always going to go downhill. I don't, like that burglary, for example, I don't expect everything to go downhill. I prepare for it, you know, for when it does. And so it's, like I said, our biggest challenges are what people expect, and we have to change that. But that takes the community involvement, talking to us. Stop us and talk to us too. Talk me anytime. I'm a chatterbox. But it's the same thing. That all goes into the whole community policing model.
Are there issues that you think the community has faced, be it racial tensions, community justice, social justice, police-community relations, that have come up in the last year that you think, you know, yeah, this is about time we're talking about that?
It's unfortunate that sometimes at that moment we're talking about that as a result of a tragedy at any point, because what you're doing is you're reliving the tragedy over again. And that's difficult to do, but is it worthwhile? Absolutely. Is it a benefit? Absolutely. We can go out and we can improve and we can learn from so much. But again, look, I mean, me personally, I've been doing this job 15 years. A tragedy like this has just lit a fire so much more to go out and bring the community together more and speak to people that maybe wouldn't be expecting me to stop and say hi, you know, or just whatever, because you'll get that too. I want to make that person say hi, you know, and something like that. So are there conversations that I've had? Are there topics that have been discussed? Yes. Are some of them difficult to hear? Yes. Are they difficult from a police officer standpoint? Absolutely. It's hard to wake up every day and be the focus of negative attention. That's hard, because that's not us. That's not us at all. No more is the Ferguson community a bunch of rogue cops and criminals. This community is not that at all. This community is amazing.
Well, you said that there have been some conversations that you've had in the community that have been difficult as a police officer to hear, but they're important to have. What have been some of those?
I was standing in the protest line one day, and when they're out there, I'll talk. I'm not going to get in an argument back and forth, but I'll have a productive conversation, and I did. And it was a few months later, some of the same people were out there. I noticed some familiar faces, and there was a gentleman I'd never seen before, and he was just started in on me. I mean, just calling me names, saying this, and the lady that I had a productive conversation with about the community, she defended me. She's on the same side that is blasting us, but she defended me and she shut him down. You know, so it's stuff like that. It's small. You start small and you start small. That was a very small thing. And she says, no, she's nice, you know, and she shut him down and he left me alone. He never said anything else to me and he moved on. But unfortunately, he moved on to another officer, you know. But it's the small conversations. It's the look at me, talk to me, don't talk to the badge, don't talk to to anything else I have on. Talk to me. And when you start opening their eyes that, you know, this badge doesn't define what you think I am. This, you know, I can tell you who I am, you know, and you start opening those doors and it really does open a lot more conversations. And it allowed for me to be defended by people that were their purpose at that time from what I heard of them. I don't know what their purpose was, but what I heard was FTP. But it gave her an opportunity and gave me an opportunity to kind of see each other.
What do you want people to know about you as a Ferguson police officer, about your colleagues here, the Ferguson Police Department?
If I wanted anybody to know anything, is you can expect whether you tell me you hate me, whether you tell me, hey, I'm there for you, I will, and these officers will, defend you. We're there to protect you. Doesn't matter if you say FTP and then you get hit by a car, I'm going to be there to pick your butt up. You know, I will be there to help you every stretch of the way. I will pick you up if you're hurt. I will help you if you're a victim. And I want the expectation of what they expect when they see the badge, when they see the uniform, to change. I want them to expect us to help them, because that's why we're here. And we would do it for you, whether it makes no difference who you are. You should expect that we're going to be there to protect you and help you and serve you.
Well, Officer Jill Gronwald, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.